This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Okay, we're starting again.
This is it's a big death scene. And this is Edvard becomes the thing, and there's a big explosion before that, and two people, like, literally in like 12 pages, there's carnage. And I have one of the most brutal deaths I've ever seen in my life on film.
A lot of people getting wiped out wholesale in this one sequence.
Yeah, because it's kind of a culmination of all the paranoia of who's the thing and who's real, and it comes into kind of this explosive moment where everything all of a sudden just falls apart. Like, all the theories and things you put your hope and trust in as an audience member and as the characters all comes to catastrophic ends right here.
So it's like pretty close to the end of the picture, obviously.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Have you actually filmed the death scene?
We filmed 4/7 of it.
Okay.
So how did you get involved with this? And were you very specifically looking to do some kind of horror genre movie? Or?
I do so many comedies that we've had numerous discussions about kind of this genre of film, and I've always been really hesitant to do so because the last thing I want to make is a horror movie. I told my dad about this script, and he told me a great story of when he was 9 years old when the original, the 1952 movie, came out. The guy is essentially just a trench coat. And he wanted to see it so bad, and my grandpa wouldn't let him see it, so he snuck into it. And he was so scared that he had to hide behind the seat, and then he would gather enough courage, and he'd poke his head out and watch like 15 seconds, and then he'd put his head back down. And he said that that movie terrified him. And then I had seen the original one, like, when I was young, and I rewatched it, and then had, you know, my first audition, and then meeting with Matthias, and he didn't want to make a horror film, he wanted to make a thriller. He wanted to do justice to what I think that John Carpenter did so well in that in his version of it, in the scene where they're testing the blood. That's the kind of paranoia and the kind of tension that's so hard to do in storytelling. And that's what Matthias wanted to do. He really wanted to do storytelling versus like, oh, someone comes up, chops somebody off with an axe, and then they run away and take out the next person. And I found that really kind of appealing for me, and in contrast to a lot of the stuff that I'd already done. So I said, hell yeah. I said, everything good. I've got nothing left. I'm out.
How are you?
Hi, how are
you? Nice to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you.
No, I'm Jordan. Nice to meet you.
We'll give you the...
It's all right. I had to talk to the wife. Everything's working out. It's all good.
You weren't over at the McDonald's thing? Because that's where I was.
I was getting a quick quarter pound of cheese.
I was like, really? McDonald's?
Do you feel like there's a sequence in this that sort of compares to the blood testing scene? Obviously not.
Because I think when the problem starts to arise, they're in a problem solving, and then there's five biologists and one paleontologist and extraction person, everybody tries to figure out their best way based on technology in 1982 to figure out the problem. So there definitely is that, but overall I think it's a way, kind of a perspective on how they want to make the movie, which is we're going to tell the story versus like just doing a horror film.
And who is your character, Weed?
I'm Adam. I work for Sander, who gets a phone call from his partner, which is the Norwegian guy, which is how this all dovetails together. And he brings in me as his assistant, and then he tells me to find a paleontologist, an extraction person, and I went to Columbia with Kate, and we're good friends. So the movie opens with me pitching this whole story to Kate about what it is that they possibly have found in the ice, and we don't know what it is. And she guesses, and I say bigger, and she guesses again, and I say bigger, and then we're off to the races in this story. But it's a great relationship, because we have that past history, and so when you go into these... kind of the turns as Act 1 ends, we go into Act 2 and Act 3, it's then about alliances and relationships, and then how that's stressed when we don't know who anybody is. And the way that I look at this, and the way the conversation I had with Matthias is, it really is kind of Aliens meets Lord of the Flies, in that all of a sudden all the rules that dictate how we act in normal society in New York, where we started, in Washington, D.C., are out the window. It's essentially a separate society, and what do we do, you know, under the banner of self-preservation? Like, who am I going to kill to protect myself? If we were all stuck in the Antarctic and there was shit going crazy, I'd kill you. He'd kill you. And then all of a sudden...
You'd all
kill
him, don't worry.
But I think that's much more of an interesting story, because I think that's about relationships. That's about... not just the paranoia of something out trying to kill us, but the paranoia of who you are and and can I trust you? And I think that's one of the things that really attracted me to this. And I think what attracted Matthias, and I think what attracted Newman and Mark, is these guys are all making that version of this movie. Because there's a terrible way to make this movie, I think. I think there's the version where they hired Chad Michael Murray and some terrible actress, and they throw him in the snow, and they run around with a bunch of jump cuts, and that's the movie. Versus guys that are big fans of the first one and want to do justice and pay homage to what it is that John Carpenter originally did. So I think that's from the top down.
Did you know Chad Michael Murray is my cousin?
You know what? I bet you that's one hell of a family reunion, hanging out with Chad Michael Murray.
So I assume you have some kind of Scandinavian background. What's it like being around all these Norwegian actors?
I'm 100% Norwegian.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I'm three generations removed, but all like continuous inbreeding of Norwegians in Minnesota and Iowa. So, and I had traveled to Norway before, but we literally grabbed like the burliest Vikings that we could find for this movie and then shipped them over here. And they're amazing. I mean, you met them. A couple of them are like...
No, we didn't meet a single one of the Norwegians.
No one was on set.
You didn't meet any Norwegians?
No.
All right, here's
everyone spoke very highly of
them. Oh, they're amazing. But that's exactly right. They're creatures from Where the Wild Things Are. They are literally just giant paws and beards and like rummaging through stuff and eating berries with their paws.
Did that come back to you when you were hanging out with them? And just all of a sudden like that come back out of you? Like,
yes, no, exactly. We were on stabbing things at lunch. It was great. We had a good bonding experience. No, but they are, I mean, they're Vikings. Some of these dudes are full-blown Vikings. And they're great because that adds to the paranoia. A couple of those guys don't speak English.
Okay.
So when shit goes down and they're speaking in Norwegian, you don't understand what they're saying. It only adds to the paranoia. Yeah. And that happens on the set. Like something will happen in the Norwegian, will tell you in Norwegian, and then they'll go, ha-ha, and they'll start laughing. Like, what? What, Norwegian? What? And he's like, nothing. You know they're talking about your mom.
Have you interacted with the a lot of prosthetics or practical effects yet?
Yeah, I spent I'm shooting second unit on the weekends, so we shot first unit Monday through Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday I spent under one of the most beautiful practicals I've ever seen. So much so that when I walked in, I didn't know it was the actor. Apple Martini right here.
Yeah. He has a memory. Actors. Thank you. You know what? Well, this is a quick question, not to interrupt you.
I know.
But I am curious. Something that we did not find out today is how long is the period of time that the movie is? You know, from when it first starts to all that stuff.
So it starts at Kate and I in New York. We're leaving in 2 days. Flight out there to... We fly through like Argentina. McMurdo, that's another 2 days. It's in the span of what, 4 or 5 days? The whole
movie? Okay.
I'll just take a beer with
I think it's day 5.
Thank you.
You finished the question?
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
Oh, the prosthetics. Yeah, so I spent, I walked in and I literally thought it was Trond, who's one of the, he's like the Norwegian Brad Pitt. I thought it was
that
him.
Edvard.
I've seen bits of Edvard.
You've seen his body.
We've seen his torso.
All right, so that torso, it's like up and launches and then like crawling towards me, and then I'm at this point been, I shouldn't be saying that.
We're all not close. Yeah,
oh, you right. are. So they can say I can say anything I want.
Never do anything about this.
The tentacle. I've been stabbed with a tentacle and I can't move, but it's paralyzed me and it's coming towards me. So it's like that last moment where you can't move. You're coming and it comes over the top of me and lowers itself down, and then smashes its head. I'm holding it back and its head isn't long enough, so the head elongates and then turns and looks me in the eye and it smashes my head to the ground, and then it's like the morphing of the two heads, which I don't know if you saw the two creatures morph together.
No, I don't think we did. I saw like a photo of it. They had like the storyboard photos. I saw something. It looks painful.
It's incredibly painful. And when I walked in there to see it was in this tent, and I just went in there to look at it and literally just kind of froze in fear. I just couldn't take my eyes off it. It's just terrifying.
Did they ask the first time you saw the thing? Do you have a recollection of the first time you rented it or saw it?
I saw it young. I was probably like 13 or 14. And I remember as soon as the dog scene happened, I was terrified through the rest of the movie. But I remember the most terrifying scene being when they're tied up or they're testing the blood.
Oh, forget it.
You can just feel it.
Oh, my God.
My heart was beating so fast through that whole scene. And then I hadn't seen it again until I had the audition and meeting, and then I rewatched it. But then watched it, obviously, in a much different sense.
Sure. So, Matthias, this is his first feature, and he's from the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Does that bring a different dynamic, the first-time director and European?
You know what? He's amazing. And mark my words, he's going to be a huge director. Because I think that he knows the story he wants to tell. He knows how to tell it. He understands tonality, how to make it consistent all the way through. So he's not making a schizophrenic film where it feels like you're watching four different films. He's a great communicator as far as figuring out what and how to make actors do what he wants. And I think that, you know, as far as him being from the Netherlands hasn't affected anything. I mean, it's like asking. That's not a good analogy. No, none whatsoever.
Have you seen his shorts? Or
yeah. Oh yeah,
or
I watched everything.
I haven't seen any of it. So
yeah, you got to watch it because that's the thing. And what's really funny about him is that even with his shorts, he's a storyteller. And he got hired to do some commercial for some car company.
Right.
And it was just about the car, and I think he got fired after like 3 days because he was like, I want to tell a story, and there's no story here. It's just shots of a shiny car, and that's his passion as a director is to tell stories. Things are happening behind us.
I think when we find out during the movie, everyone's going to automatically assume that you're adding comic relief or anything like that.
That I'm what?
That you're adding comic relief or you're kind of adding some humor.
I don't know if I have a single. I don't know if I have a single joke in this.
Okay. There's not like any kind of
light.
Yeah, it becomes a joke, not on purpose. The first scene, there's definite like. I don't think I have any. Yeah. No, I'm playing in complete contrast to most things I do. There's no room for comedy.
Was that one of the things that also attracted you to the role? Is that it's so not what people expect?
Well, I mean, we're definitely... I had a conversation after doing, you know... I had done so many broad comedies, and then I had a conversation with my mom, and she goes, why don't you do more romantic comedies? And so then I did like 3 romantic comedies, and I was like, why don't you just do whatever you want? Why don't you play something like that you went to school for? And I'm doing a series next year where I'm playing a lawyer who's dropped out of being law and now is an undercover cop, and doing this on the same time, I think that there's definitely, I've been really lucky in being able to kind of jump back and forth from the two. And I think one of the appeals to this for sure is that it's this character. There's, you know, after that first scene, there's no comedy. And I think that's appealing to any actor, but definitely for me because I've done so much of it.
You said something before about it not being a horror film, but being a thriller. But it is a horror film, but I think it's a throwback to a different kind of horror film. It's not slasher or torture horror where people are just getting hacked up from one end to the other. This is a horror film in a truer sense.
Yes.
Would you say that?
I think that's a better description than what I gave you. And I think that that's what, somehow that's got lost in kind of my generation, that a horror film is Jason versus Freddy or whatever these stories have become. That horrible movie where they went out to the lake and somebody was like water snowboarding or wakeboarding and they got their head cut off. I mean, there's no story.
Friday the 13th,
the last one.
Yeah, Chad McElroy was there.
I think he was. He probably was. He's probably the lead. He probably told you about it.
Would he call him up?
Chad McElroy was reading this interview and he's like, what the fuck did I do to these people?
Chad Michael knows what he did to the world.
You wanted to be in Friday the 13th, he took your role, didn't you?
What's that?
You wanted to be in Friday the 13th, he took your role, didn't he?
He what?
He took your role. He took your role in Friday the 13th.
I've never auditioned for one of those movies. I've turned down every one of those auditions. No, but you're right. I mean, that's what a horror film has become. But this is the truer sense of what it was when it started off in the 80s. So yeah, it's a thriller for what we know now, and it's a horror film for what the kind of the beginning and the birth of creation of that type of genre.
You think that we had this conversation earlier today with the other people that horror movies move, or thrillers or whatever, they move at a really fast pace, and what it seems like you guys might be going for is a more slow burn, a more character piece, a more methodical kind of thing. Do you think that that's risky at all because of the way audience audiences are now geared for this quick cutting kind of thing? Or do you think that they're hungry for what you guys are going to be feeding them?
I think it's got to be a combination of both, because one of the movies that I saw that I loved was, did you guys see Zodiac?
Yeah, of course.
Terrified.
Yeah.
And it was great. And there was that building tension all the way through. He told a great story. Nobody saw him. Because I think that everybody that's watching these Jason versus Freddy that made $1 billion was like, well, there's nothing in there. It was all slow, you know, raking twos and pullbacks. And so I think it's got to be, in all honesty, it's got to be a combination of both those things. And I think that's the tough part, is making it, you know, that what we're talking about, but also having enough of those. And we do, with the practicals, we have that, with the CGI, within the combination of those things, we're going to have that. And it's that's a good question.
But you know what I'm saying, though.
I know exactly what you're saying.
You know, but
I know
here's the thing, getting into your Zodiac thing, when Jake Gyllenhaal is in the basement of the house,
that scene is so good.
Yeah. Okay, people, like, I'm literally, for me, I was on the edge of my seat, like, oh my fucking god.
Yeah.
So
that guy's
when,
so good, by the way. He's so creepy.
He's a comedian, too. He's a comedian, too.
I know.
Hey, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, when you turn dark.
When in this film, when do you think there's going to be that scene like Jake in the basement, where people are like, when does it first hit, where you're like edge of your seat, holy shit?
But to do justice to that movie, you just have a guy in a basement with another guy. So that started long before that scene. So in this movie, I think that you start it right around page 20. And I think that's when things start to fall apart. But it's a slow fall apart, and it's a slow build to a couple of scenes right around the end of, right around the middle of Act 3 that have all that stuff. That it's just literally at that point you're like, you're sweating. And it becomes that experience where it's just emotionally exhausting.
How people who have either, people who have seen the original movie might kind of expect that kind of tone. And they might know that where it's going to, because the first original movie, they've seen it a bunch of times. They'll know it's slow, they'll know it's going to build something big. People who haven't, how important is it for them to go into this without seeing that other movie so they can kind of experience this other thing?
That's a good question. That's more of a marketing and advertising question. I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that. As an actor, barely an actor. I think
because this happened before that in the movie. So theoretically,
yeah,
separately and not.
No, I mean, I would argue that it's a standalone, but I think it's much better if you've seen the first film. Is it necessary? Probably not. How do I answer that? I mean. I'm sure Universal owns the rights to the first one. They're like, yeah, tell them they have to see the first one. DVD revenue.
Yes, own it on DVD.
Own it on DVD. You should buy it on Blu-ray.
Deluxe Blu-ray coming out.
It will be out the week before we
have to. When you what? Right, exactly. Then I get residuals. I mean, it's beautifully dovetailed in, obviously. And it's set up like the first movie. It's like Jonathan Carpenter's movie. It's dovetails that leads you into, I mean, that first scene, you're like, what the fuck is happening?
Right,
who are these
right.
Norwegians with a gun yelling at this dog? Like, what is happening? So I think it lends itself to do a prequel. But without seeing the first one, this movie still makes sense from point A to point B.
Now, you mentioned how the movie had to sort of convince you that it was going to be a different kind of movie. How did you have to convince the director and the producers that you were going to be a different?
A long, long conversation. I mean, the Adam in the first script is very different than what it's become now. And that's a tribute to Matthias and how great he is at communicating. But it's a conversation I have with him. It's a conversation I have with Mark. It's a conversation that then he has to go to the writers, and then they come back with, you know, a draft, and then they go back with another draft, and he changes this. And I mean, it's kind of an evolution of a character to what it is right now, which is kind of, I think there is in life, simplistically, when we study biology, there's people that. In a situation that there's whatever the catastrophic events are, there's fight or flight. And my character is flight. I mean, it's just not even, he doesn't think about it, it's just self-preservation. It's weakness. And I think that he's like that shark that, he's like the fish that goes under the shark that can't fend for itself because it knows that it can't maneuver the waters, it can't navigate on its own, so it finds something more powerful than itself and aligns it with that, which I think puts him in an even more weak position, because then when those alliances fall apart and he doesn't know who to trust, he's swimming on his own for the first time. And in that place, he's incapable. And that was a character that, you know, evolved out of multiple conversations. But I think it's a really human story to tell, and I think that as an audience member, I think you're going to identify with this kid, because at the end of the day, he's just doing what he's got to do to survive.
Have you been working on the character on set? Have you been doing more bits and things to add to the character?
I think, always. Because everything changes, and when you change something here, it's going to change everything down the line. So as everything evolves and changes, what somebody else does versus what I do, you know, you got to make, I guess, a linear reconstruction all the way across the board of what it is you're going to be doing.
Go ahead.
Just try to make a consistent through line.
After making a movie like this, can you go back to doing something like comic, like Fired Up, or is it like, you feel like at this point you got to stay in one direction?
No, that's the beauty. I think one of the great things about Hollywood right now, there's a lot of great things about Hollywood. One of the great things about Hollywood now is that you can literally jump, if you can pull it off, you can jump from comedy to drama and TV to film and back and forth, and there's no consequence like it was even 15 years ago. So I'm doing a show called Community right now where I do episodes of that, and I have so much fun on that, and it's a completely different character than I've ever played. And then this other show that I'm doing next year, and then this, and then I'll do, you know, probably another comedy next summer. And I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way. Because, Fired Up, that was the easiest, most amazing job ever. And it was literally just like me and Nick D'Agosto and like 40 beautiful women every day. It's a good gig. Here, it's me, a prosthetic, gooey creature smashing my head into the concrete.
And a bunch of Vikings.
Keep stabbing and stealing all the pineapple.
So you can still see the advantage, though, of doing roles like Fired Up. There's no pleasure to that.
I think there's advantages. I could argue advantages for.
I think you have to stop playing high school guys.
Oh my God, that was terrible. Yeah. Well, Will called me. I was doing another movie, and Will called me. He goes, "Hey, do you know anybody that can play you, but like a decade earlier?" And I go, and I gave him like a list of names, and he went out and auditioned those people, and he's like, "It's just not working. I can't find anybody." And I was like, "Well, I don't know what to tell you, man. Good luck with that." And then he called 2 weeks later and says, "Hey, when do you come back from New York?" And I was like, "I'm back in like a week." He goes, "Will you just come in and read opposite this guy? I just want you to read it out loud. I just want to hear it to make sure that I'm not crazy, that it is funny and good." And then I read opposite that guy, and I got sucked into to making the movie where I was playing 12 years younger than what I am in real life. But I had a blast, and I love Will Gluck. I think he's a. I don't know if you guys haven't seen this movie Easy A, which is his next movie. It's. I saw it. You know, when he showed me a rough cut probably a month and a half ago. It's so good, and that guy is going to be a huge comedy director. And I'll work with him. You know, that's probably going to be my next comedy. It's back doing something with Will. So I had a great time on Fired Up. Granted, I was ridiculously. I mean, but it's a broad comedy. That doesn't justify it. Still, too.
Are you trying to say? Well, you look at the kids on Glee. I mean, one of those guys is 64. I mean, seriously.
He who has not sinned will cast the first stone. I will say nothing about Glee. Because in all honesty, when I got cast in this, I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm so old. I got a beard. Wait, have you seen? There's a thing on YouTube. I want you to look it up. That we did. That Will and I did to address this. Because I kept saying how ridiculous it is. Where I'm doing a spoof of Christian Bale's rant. I'm on the roof and I'm screaming about pom-poms. I'm like, look at me, man, I'm 33, I got a beard, I gotta pick up my kids in private school, what the fuck are we doing? And that was kind of the only saving grace for me, because I was like, I have to say something, like, this is ridiculous. And he was like, I know, let's do this short. So I'll be the first to admit that it was ridiculous.
Now, what is the situation with your community role? Like, is it just, you know, they call, say, come in and do an afternoon, you know,
they
drop by?
They've been really great about, I mean, I was busy doing a lot of stuff this year, and they were like, hey, can you come in and do 2 days here and 2 days there? And I was going to do the last 5 episodes of the year, but I couldn't because I started this and started something else. But I mean, that some of that Do you see the paintball episode of Community?
Oh, that, yeah.
I mean, what? These guys are geniuses. Yeah. They're geniuses. And so next year, I hopefully, when you're onto a series, you can only do, I think, two or three episodes of an opposing network series. And so I hope to do more just because I love the Russo brothers. I think those guys, you know, Arrested Development was like, for me, that was the best show for my generation.
What's the series that you're doing?
I haven't said.
Yeah, I was going to say. And I don't know.
I haven't said, because I'm not supposed to say anything yet.
Oh.
And they can lock down everything for Universal.
But. I was going to say, so it's okay. It's going to be Universal, NBC Universal show.
Not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
That's why I can't say anything, because if it was NBC Universal, they'd be like, squash it. But
is it a pilot or something?
No, it's a series.
Okay.
It's a series.
So basically, let's ask you this question. When will you be talking about this series that you can talk about?
As soon as they let me, man. I don't make these decisions on my own. I'm just a puppet.
Okay, I'll ask you a different question. I noticed the skateboard.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to skate when you are filming a movie that could jeopardize your... Oh, I'm getting you in trouble. That's right.
I have a rent-a-car, but I don't... I've never used it. That's not true. I have a rent-a-car, but I've never checked it out. So it's I'm saving Universal $226 a week.
Did you skateboarded here?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I got you in trouble.
All I do is speak for all of them. Let's be honest, whatever, I got like a week and a half left. I break a leg, they're gonna fix it. I put probably 200 miles on the skateboard since I've been up here because Toronto's traffic is so congested that you can't get anywhere. So
don't know that's absolutely true.
It's absolutely true. So anytime I go anywhere, I take this. In Yorkville, I'm, you know, it's only 4 miles from my hotel.
Do you wear a helmet?
Yes, I stored it in the closet. I gotta blow my nose.
I'm never getting a one-on-one ever.
The great thing is that you knew that was a question that was getting you in trouble, and you still lobbed
it. Oh yeah, no, it was a grenade.
Could have blown his nose in front of us.
No,
I thought it was kind of funny.
We're all humans.
You know what's funny is you did put it right next to you.
Yeah, like, here's the deal, it's that they wouldn't rat me out.
And it is a long
you
board.
You ratted me out.
It is a long board.
Fortunately, we're embargoed for a while, so there's nothing that we can print.
You know what I mean? It's faster than I went and test drove a car at a Lexus dealership. Do you know Toronto at all?
Yeah.
So up to St. Clair, you know where St. Clair is? And then down 8.6 miles. And I started skating and I was... So I ended up doing like 20 miles that day. But it's still faster. Getting home, I was like racing the trolley cars. And I counted the number to make sure where I was. And I beat it home all the way down Dundas, or whatever it's called, Dundas.
You went to the Lexus dealership in St. Clair West and Weston Road?
Yes.
See, it's just not your carriage to maintain and get high school roll, because carrying it in high school roll.
Just so I pick up chicks. Yeah. You want to ride around on a skateboard?
Fire up.
Yeah. I'm 17. Let's make out. No, that skateboard, you can tell by the wheels. They came originally in white.
That's funny.
Well, thanks for coming on the show.
Of course, I appreciate it. I'm sorry I missed it. Anything else? We're good.
We're good. Thank you.
Unless you
want
to tell us what TV series.
Yeah, no, let's talk about your TV series.
I'm going to stop digging for it.
I would love to tell you. Nothing would make me happy because everybody's just like, what are you doing? Like, what show are you doing?
Well, but here's the thing. What's weird about the show is most of the network shows have been announced for the fall, so are you doing...
No, Shad. We already heard it's an established show. So you're joining the cast of an established show.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I didn't do a pilot this year, because I knew... There's nothing to talk about. Yeah, it's a show that's established that I'm joining.
On which you play an undercover cop, which can only be a certain number of shows that, you know, could feature an undercover cop, in theory.
No, you could have an undercover cop on Grey's Anatomy.
Hypothetically speaking.
Hypothetically, you could have an undercover cop that then... became a doctor.
Ooh, wow. Well, let's ask this question.
And Community, I could be playing an undercover cop.
You could.
Wouldn't that be funny? It's actually Glee. The sad thing is that I am going to go back and play high school on Glee. Me and that 64-year-old dude. Is it a guy or a girl that's 64?
I'm so joking around about 64, but like a lot of those kids are like 25 or 27, and they're playing 17 or 16.
Yeah, Corey Monteith is 27, so
that's terrible.
But well, that's what it is. But here's the
sarcasm.
Last question for you though. But being serious, my thing's still going. But like, was there any apprehension for you signing on to a series, or did you sign on to this for just a limited time, or did you sign on for an extended thing? Because that obviously you're doing films.
Yeah.
And doing a show. If you're doing a network, you're doing 22 episodes, and that is a huge time commitment.
You're making me claustrophobic, man. No, it's a great question, and it's a question that I thought about for months. But it's the kind of show.
Someone knows something.
She does.
Get another drink.
Yeah. You buy her a couple more appetitis, and she'll be telling you anything you want to know. He's joining Doctor Who. It's a character that it was worth it. At the end of the day, it's worth it.
Okay.
And that's a tough question because it's a lot of months out of the year, and I've been really lucky to work pretty consistently in film and TV. But it's, you know, it's a great leading role man and leading man role. It's a smart character. It was worth doing.
Are you filming in LA?
I don't know. I might be filming in Hawaii.
Lost.
Oh my god.
I'm doing the Lost.
The Lost follow-up.
It's just me and Adewale. I'm the smoke monster. He's coming in for guest appearances.
So it's the spinoff we've been hearing so much about.
Of Lost.
Okay. There you go.
I would honestly, it's ridiculous how much I would just love to tell you, because there's no point in not telling you except for the fact that I'm not supposed to.
No, I totally get it.
Yeah.
That's cool. Congratulations.
But thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to do this interview. And I'm excited to...